Okay, very good. I think we'll resume. The next talk is by me, John Wenzel, and the title is Reproductive Castes and Social Wasps, Queenless Societies and Highly Social Insects. So different castes and phenotypic plasticity in Hymenoptera are really one of the pinnacles of phenotypic plasticity. And if you look up in Wikipedia, the second paragraph says that social insects rock because of this. So it must be true, because Wikipedia says so. What I'm going to talk about is not this diversity of castes among workers, but rather the difference between the reproductives and the workers, and specifically the word queen. And the important lesson is that there are all kinds of different queens. So here's Her Royal Highness the Queen of England. She's a real queen. Here's His Royal Pharis, the queen of the Willie Hennig Society. And he is not really a queen. Well, that was fun. Okay. That's actually kind of the lesson here, as you will see. One of the great problems to explain in social insects has been the peculiar morphological variation in swarming wasps. Here's a picture of a common Polybia. You can't tell who the queen is. In fact, the difference between those that lay eggs and those that don't ranges from very slight continuous differences that don't seem to tell you anything to discrete and unambiguous differences that anyone can find. In some cases, queens are smaller than workers, which is not consistent with the traditional idea that queens are dominant individuals that maintain their position by aggression. To show you some of these, this is Angiopolybia, one of the things that we call queenless. Here's a queen. This is an intermediate. In other words, she has developed ovaries, but she isn't, and she's inseminated, but she isn't laying eggs, and this is a worker. Actually, there's really no way you can tell these apart. Here's Agileia. The worker and the queen are so different that it would be easy to imagine calling them different species, even if you didn't know they were on the same nest. These pictures, unfortunately, are not quite to the same scale. This queen here, B, is actually smaller than the worker, A. A couple of years ago, Fernando and I were very pleased to find that a model that was in the literature from way, way back and then modernized and improved by Diana Wheeler, which we call the ant model, works really well for wasps. No one paid much attention to what Diana said, but I think she's right. It works for wasps anyway. And the idea is that you take a phenotypic plasticity, that you develop a phenotypic plasticity rather easily. If you imagine some developmental trajectory, this could be abdomen widths, and this could be head widths, or something like that. And originally, you have a single developmental trajectory that explains all individuals. And if all you do is interrupt that so that you have little individuals and big ones, but nobody in between, then it would be easy to have a developmental switch so that once a larva knows if it's going to be little or it's going to be big, then you could separate those and have different developmental trajectories based on a switch. If that switch moves earlier and earlier in time, so let's say it's the first instar, then it might not relate to final body size. And so you could have overlapping body sizes with different developmental trajectories, and you could get casts that we see, complex casts. As I say, this was originally developed for ants, but Fernando and I extended it for wasps, and it works really well. In this paper we published years ago, we measured all these different body parts that are known to relate to casts in species that have casts. And then we had a principal components analysis, separate these into clusters. If you plot those clusters on a cladogram, this is a cladogram from an even earlier work by Wenzel and Carpenter. What we found was those that have no measurable difference in any of these nine variants, so the red squares are queens, are egg layers, and the blue circles are not egg layers. These that show no difference are all in the bottom of the tree, the green cluster. Then you develop a cluster where the egg layers are larger, but essentially the same shape, but larger, eventually a different shape, and then in two lineages you have this weird overlapping different shape thing, so the queens are smaller in some regard than workers. Some of these Polybia, there's Agileia over there. So the idea that there's something specially plastic about this, we can reject that, because if that were true, these colors would be all mixed up, but they're not. So apparently phylogeny is a really good predictor of this, otherwise you wouldn't have all the colors plotting out together, right? So now what we're going to do is ask, what is a queen anyway? So having shown that these morphological variation evolves in a in a fashion that is interpretable, and that queen smaller than workers has evolved more than once. Now we're going to attack the concept of queen. So we commonly use the word queen like with a sociobiological definition, where an Attic queen is the same as an Apis queen, which is the same as a Philistes queen. Is that what you mean? If that's the way you're going to use the word, you can go ahead and use that. We're going to take it as an evolutionary origin question, phylogenetic origin. Is this body shape, is this morphology, is this thing that is laying eggs the same as a different thing laying eggs? And that's a question: is the Polystes queen homologous to a Polybia queen? And you could answer no if it's a question about origins rather than sociobiological definition. So if we look at Polystes, here's a Polystes laying an egg, she's the queen. The primitively social wasps have a single queen usually that maintains her dominance physically. Anyone can lay eggs though. And usually morphological variation is quite slight. It's rare that you find more than about 10% difference between the one who's laying eggs and the ones who are not. So now what I'm going to do is plot a bunch of characters. This is a cladogram taken from Wenzel and Carpenter. What you're seeing here is taken from a paper we just published this year. Down here we have the two primitive genera that we often use as models, Polystes and Miscicetaris, and then this is the cladogram for the social wasps that are swarming wasps. And in this case, I've plotted polygyny, that is, that you have many queens versus monogyny. And I'm not going to bother to explain all the difference in the characters. What I want you to notice is that basically never does the group of swarming wasps have the same character state as the two primitive wasps. So we have, so in some cases we know all the data. That's what these squares up here mean. Other cases we don't know all the data, but as an example, control of reproduction is exerted by egg layers. This means the queen will throttle anyone who tries to lay an egg and then she'll eat the egg. There's no evidence that the egg layers express any dominance or reproductive control whatsoever in any of these things that have the black boxes, and the other values are unknown. So everybody is the same, and none of them express any form of dominance or control. So we optimize the black boxes all the way back to there, and you see that the swarming wasps are different from the primitive ones. So now we have, now these are some morphometric measures. Is the egg layer larger, smaller, different? All I want you to notice as we go through this is the swarming wasps are not the same as the primitive ones. The difference in the head width, minimal orbital difference, width of mesoscutum, so the width of the thorax, length of the thorax. Once again, you notice they're never the same as the primitive ones. Length of abdominal tergum, nope, not the same. Width of abdominal tergum, nope, not the same. Partial length of forewing, it's a cell that's conservative, it's a good measure of body size in other ways, not the same. This is the only one in which some of the swarming wasps have the same state as the primitive monogynic wasp, which is ovarian development. That is, do the wasps that are not laying eggs, do they have the ability to lay eggs? Yes, that runs throughout, except for the ones that have these very distinct differences. So what we get to is, what is a queen? Well, the reproductive individuals in swarming wasps are not comparable in any way to the queens of Polystes, except for reproduction itself. That's the only thing that they're like Polystes in. The swarming wasps of Epipennini represent an expression of phenotypic plasticity that is unrelated to that seen in the more primitive species. And so to the extent that Polystes is a model for the origin of sociality, such a model is not informative for either the morphological or social evolution of the swarming wasps. So the queens of the swarming wasps are not the queens of the primitive wasps in any way. Thank you very much. Oh, come on. Yeah, Jake.
So in the swarming wasps, they don't have behavioral aggression or interference. Is there a chance that they're something more subtle, like individual, at all, or are they all connected?
Well, if you go back as far as 78, where Mary Jane published the first pertinent observations on this, and ever since then, creeping into the literature here and there, but never really identified as such, are reports that the workers are the ones that are testing the queens. So what happens is, if you're laying eggs, the workers challenge you, and if you seem to be healthy and strong, you're allowed to continue. And if not, then they get rid of you. Mary Jane didn't actually observe the murders, but we have them on tape now, where they tear the wings off the female and throw her to the ground, things like that. So to the extent that we have evidence of suppression of reproduction, it is the workers suppressing queens whose fecundity is in doubt. And this is really a different thing. And Fernando and I think that they suppressed whatever that Polistes queen was, the workers ganged up and suppressed her completely and got rid of her totally. They killed their queen. All right, thank you.